Well, thank you, and welcome everybody to services today. The first message really ties in with mine because it deals about family situations. And I'm going to talk about, as my title says, the title is, It's Not Fair, and in parentheses, An Unusual Biblical Family. So I'm going to talk about an unusual biblical family in a sense that their words and their actions could have made a lot of difference had they acted differently. But life isn't always fair. We all know that. Sometimes it seems to be more unfair to some than to others. And we can see that in sibling rivalry. For example, how many times growing up have you complained that something just wasn't fair? How come he gets to do that and I don't? I didn't get to do that when I was his age. Why do I always have to do whatever it is? How come that's always my job? Why can't my brother or my sister do that? And just for reference, I was a middle child with an older sister and a younger brother. And I think there's something called middle child syndrome. It, whatever it is, probably affected me. But those of you who are parents have probably heard many, many examples between your children. How come whatever? I didn't get to do whatever. And when I look back in my own life, I can remember several incidents, which they were very minor in the grand scheme of life, but they make me wish that I could go back and somehow change things and change the way I treated others. I could offer apologies and offer thanks, ask for forgiveness for my rudeness at the time. And I also wish that I could go back and gain more understanding of what was going on in the lives and minds of the others at that time. And I know I mentioned this to my sister one time. I remember whatever it was, and I really feel bad about the way I acted towards you. And turns out it was something she didn't even remember, and it was probably bad on my part to remind her of it. I remember, and you were wrong. But that's probably a normal feeling that we all have at various times. I think about my younger brother as well. How come he gets this? How come he gets a nice train set or car set like we see on the floor here? Now, my brother's wasn't quite that fancy, but he had something that I didn't have when I was his age. So we all go through that to some degree or another. It may be triggered by certain happenings in our daily life or by hearing of situations of other people or reading of or about someone else. Maybe seeing a stranger who reminds us of someone in our past or present life. And that's happened to me. I'll walk by someone and say, that guy looks familiar. I wonder who it is. And, oh, he reminds me of so-and-so. Yeah, I remember him, my neighbor. I don't remember a lot about him, but I wonder what he's doing these days. So little things can trigger thoughts of our own lives and of the lives of individuals in the Bible. So in this message, I'll be considering the strange situation of Jacob, Leah, and Rachel. And the title I've given this message is, It's Not Fair, in parentheses, An Unusual Biblical Family. And this family was unusual in a few ways, but as we probably will find out, what they went through are things that families go through today as well. So let's first of all get the biblical background of the people involved by looking at the families and the individuals mentioned in Genesis 28, 1 through 5. Genesis 28, 1 through 5, Isaac is giving marriage instructions to his son Jacob. Genesis 28, verse 1, then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father. That Bethuel, I guess, was a pronunciation I found online. Sounds good to me. And take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. And then verse 3 and 4, he says a prayer for his son. May God Almighty bless you, make you fruitful, and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples, and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. In verse 5, so Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Aram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. On verses 6 through 9, in the same chapter, we read that Esau marries Mahalalel. This word didn't print out very well. The daughter of Abraham's son Ishmael, in addition to his other wives. So he had multiple wives. Now in Genesis 28, verses 10 through 22, just in summary, Jacob makes a vow at Bethel. He used a stone as his pillow, and this is the stone that's now known as the Stone of Scone. I believe it was in Windsor Castle at one time, but it's now in Edinburgh, Scotland. And then he set the stone as a pillar and vows to serve God and tithe to him. So that was Jacob's vow, his promise. In Genesis 29, starting in verse 1, so Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there. They would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, my brethren, where are you from? And they said, we are from Haran. Then he said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. So he said to them, is he well? And they said, he is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep. Now there's an article that I came across when I was working on this message. And it led me to a site called womeninthebible.net and various subsections and eventually down to Leah. And that article points out that the men are rather terse in speaking about Laban. They didn't say too much about him. They said, we know him. He's well, and his daughter, Rachel, is coming with his sheep. They know Laban well, and surely if he'd been a good man, they would have said something in his favor. That's what this commentary said. But they didn't. It just said very briefly. In Genesis 29, verse 9, now while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now usually it would be a male who tended the sheep or the flocks, and this may indicate that Rachel had no brothers. We don't know. It doesn't say about that. In verse 10, and it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Jacob was smitten with Rachel. And immediately he rolled the stone away. Now, normally it takes two or more men to do that, but he was he had this sudden burst of energy that he did it all on his own. And then in verse 11, continuing in Genesis 29, then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. In verse 13, then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him, brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Verse 15, then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Rachel was the one of interest to Jacob. And it says, Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. Now just reading that, Leah's eyes were delicate doesn't seem to indicate anything bad, but let's see. Yeah, I don't have the source of this. It was something I looked up on the internet. It said some other translations say that they were tender or weak or cloudy, or there was no sparkle in Leah's eyes. In Arabic, the name Leah means wild cow. Now, that doesn't sound too flattering. Well, her sister Rachel's name means ewe, E-W-E, a sheep. Thus, some say that Leah may have had cow eyes. And if you look at the eyes of a cow, they're big and bulging and stick out. I would hope that she didn't have that. She would have been an outcast, it would seem. But maybe large, brown, bulging eyes, but we aren't given a full description in the Bible. A couple of translations, and these were some that came when I looked up for references. It was the Holy Bible from Ancient Eastern Manuscripts by George Lamsa, and the Living Bible say that they were attractive or lovely. But since the next part of the verse contrasts Leah to Rachel's beauty, it's more likely that her eyes were lacking in some way and weren't noticeable in some unattractive way. So she kind of had a misfortune in her looks, it seems anyway. Now, we don't know too much about Laban's family. His wife isn't mentioned. She may have died, making Leah responsible for running the household. And Leah could even have been present when Jacob met Rachel. We don't know. It doesn't say. As mentioned above, we don't know whether there were any sons in the family. It doesn't seem like it, because it seems like sons are important enough that they would be mentioned. And had there been sons, that might have changed this whole relationship. We just don't know. Continuing on in verse 18, now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." And Laban says, "It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. I'm sure he was counting days, at least mentally, days till he could get married to Rachel. In verse 21, then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled that I may go into her." So he felt he had done his duty. He was going to take her as wife. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob. Now Leah wasn't the one Jacob was after, but he went into her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me?" And he felt he had truly been deceived. He knew that Laban knew that Rachel was the one that he wanted. So how and why did this happen? Brides in those days were heavily veiled and clothed. Their faces and features couldn't really be seen. Jacob had every reason to believe that this was Rachel, because she was all covered in clothing, even her face. He couldn't see anything. Laban certainly knew that Rachel was the daughter Jacob wanted to marry. They had also been feasting and celebrating. And Jacob's mind may have been a little cloudy. Well, these, I think, are just excuses. The sisters' voices may have been similar enough that Jacob couldn't tell the difference. Or maybe Leah didn't speak at all that night. We don't know the details. Who did know about it? Well, Jacob didn't know what was going on, but others certainly did. Laban was at the head of the deception. He was the father of the daughters. Leah and Rachel both had to know which one was going in to be with Jacob. And once Jacob found out, Laban offered an explanation. And this explanation is given in Genesis 29, verses 26 and 7. And Laban said, "It must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service, which you will serve with me still another 7 years." So he said, and we know it's Rachel, she's the one that you wanted, and you can have her as your bride if you serve me for 7 more years. Now, what are marriage customs at the time? It was apparently the custom in that part of the world at that time that a younger daughter couldn't be married before the oldest one. If we give Laban the benefit of the doubt, he may have assumed that Jacob knew about this and knew that he must marry Leah before Rachel. But the way the passage is worded, it certainly doesn't appear that. He didn't think that was Leah. He thought it was Rachel. Now, what about Leah's situation? Whatever happened, she was put into a very difficult situation. If Laban had allowed the marriage to Rachel go ahead, Leah would have been very humiliated and would possibly have become unmarriageable, because people would have been skeptical about her. Because, well, why isn't she married? It's custom for the oldest daughter to be married first. There must be something wrong with her. But it was also humiliating for her to be foisted on Jacob, married out of duty rather than out of love. Either way, she knew that she wasn't wanted. Continuing in Genesis 29, verse 28, "Then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. So he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid." Now, we aren't told anything about how well the sisters got along. As sisters, they probably got along well enough. They had grown up together and knew each other, and certainly probably got along in their younger years. In any marriage with multiple wives, there's bound to be conflict between the wives. And if two of those wives are also sisters, the conflict would be intensified. And that's what happened. That's what became the case. Jacob's appraisal of the situation was possibly one of thinking that it's not fair. It's just not fair. Laban knew what I wanted. Why didn't he just explain up front that I would need to marry Leah first? Given time, I could have helped find a suitable husband for her. He doesn't say, given time, I could have grown to love her and married her. But he said, no, I would have seen that she needed a husband, and it wasn't going to be me, so I had better find someone else for her. Tough situation. Was it fair? Was Jacob treated fairly? On the surface, it doesn't seem like it. It seems like he and both ladies were put in an awkward situation. What kind of man would use such trickery? Yes, what kind of man would use trickery like that? How about Jacob himself? We won't turn back there, but consider Jacob's rivalry with his brother Esau. His father Isaac favored Esau, but his mother Rebekah favored Jacob. And you may recall that situation. And we remember in Genesis 25, verse 19 through 34, how Jacob prepared a stew. When Esau came in from the field, exhausted, he asked Jacob to give him some of the stew. Jacob demanded that Esau sell him the birthright in exchange for the stew. Esau was so hungry that he felt near death and agreed to do it. Jacob, that's the kind of person he was. And later, in Genesis 27, and covers most of the rest of the chapter, it talks about the blessing that was given to him because of this deception. When Jacob's father Isaac was old and had bad vision, he asked Esau to hunt some game to make some savory food. Rebekah overheard and told Jacob to go out and kill some goats so that Jacob could bring the food to his father. She even dressed him in Esau's clothes and put goat skins on his hands and neck so that he could pass as Esau. Through this deception, Jacob also obtained the blessing from his father. An interesting situation. Jacob wasn't that pure man himself. So, deception, it seems, was nothing new to the family. And the deception of marrying Leah rather than Rachel was probably appropriate turnabout and payback for what Jacob had done to Esau. He was getting what he deserved in that sense. But regardless, from the beginning of the marriage, Leah was not loved. Genesis 29 and verse 30, then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served Laban still another 7 years, served seven more years to get the bride that he wanted. Verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So God has things in mind. He's going to work things out and see that Jacob gets what he deserves. So Genesis 29:32, we read about Leah's children. Leah bears four sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, each time thinking that Jacob would finally love her. Verse 32 of Genesis 29. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, so Jacob still didn't love her, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah. And she stopped bearing. She stopped bearing, but after raising several sons. Leah was doing everything she could to gain favor from Jacob, but she never received the love from him she was hoping for. This was a tragic situation, and it definitely wasn't fair to her. And now she has stopped bearing children. And none of this was her fault. She didn't do anything to deserve this kind of treatment. But Rachel had her problems too, of course, and she was becoming envious of Leah, because Leah had all these sons. Rachel had no children at all. Genesis 30, verse 1. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? Compare Jacob's attitude to that of his father Isaac. Genesis 25, 21, you don't need to turn there. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So God answered that plea, but he apparently wasn't answering Jacob. Then it talks about children from their maids. Genesis 30, going on in verse 3, we read that Rachel's maid Bilhah bore him sons, Dan and Naphtali, and Leah's maid Zilpah bore sons, Gad and Asher. In Genesis 30:13, then Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Asher. She may have been happy at the time, but she still wasn't loved as Rachel was. Leah still was kind of the stepwife, or whatever you want to call her. She was put in second place. Now in Genesis 30, verses 14, talks about mandrakes. It says, now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. Now, I didn't know anything about mandrakes, so I looked online, and I found a site named GodAsAGardener.com and a bunch of substeps down to Jacob the Mandrakes, and where it explains something about the belief in mandrakes. And this article says, many Westerners cannot make much sense of this story, the story about the mandrakes. What does the mandrake have to do with pregnancy? In early peoples, the mandrake was associated with the superstitious belief that it promoted fertility and conception in barren women. The mandrake root was consumed in very small amounts, cut into an amulet to wear on the body or put beneath the bed. The Genesis story revealed that Rachel and Leah believed that mandrakes promoted conception. And both Leah and Rachel wanted children. Leah wanted additional children to win the regard and affection of Jacob. She was still pursuing that. And Rachel wanted children to validate herself as a woman. Rachel was so desperate to have children that she was willing to have Jacob spend a night with Leah to get possession of the mandrakes. We are told whether Jacob believed that mandrakes promoted fertility. However, at this time, Jacob spent his nights with Rachel, knowing she wanted children. In verse 15, but she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? What was it about mandrakes? I didn't know anything about them. I looked online. And when you think of a plant, you think of pulling it up and getting, I don't know, something like a carrot where a single root comes out, or maybe spread out a little bit more to the surface where a lot of roots come out. But I looked at it, and this mandrake, if you look beneath the surface, it goes down beneath the surface and it spreads out and has other branches that spread out further and further and further and further. It just kind of consumes that whole land that it's on, along with a surrounding area around it, because these roots down there would prevent other growth around it. Now, well, let's say back to 15, Genesis 30, 15. But she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" So there was superstition about these mandrakes. Now, notice how possessive of Jacob Leah now is. "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband?" And how she feels willing to assert herself because she has borne Jacob children seems to mark a change in her attitude and maybe giving her more self-confidence and self-esteem. In verse 16 of Genesis 30, "When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, 'You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes.' And he lay with her that night." Verse 17, "And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, 'God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband.' So she called his name Issachar. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, 'God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons.' So she called his name Zebulun. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah." So that was her thought. Well, maybe now I'll finally win the affection of my husband. In verse 22 of Genesis 30, "Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, 'God has taken away my reproach.' So she called his name Joseph and said, 'The Lord shall add to me another son.'" In verse 25, "And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Jacob, that Jacob said to Laban, 'Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my servants, which I have done for you.'" And then Jacob asks for his wages, and the wages he asks for are that they give him all the speckled and spotted sheep and goats and all the brown lambs, and then he works to ensure the growth of them. Now, apparently these were a smaller part of the flock, so they were given to him, but God knew what he was doing. Jacob knew what he would be able to do. And in verse 31, or chapter 31, we learn that Jacob flees from Laban then. 31, verse 4, "So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock, and he said to them, 'I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable to me toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me." And this is Jacob's, what Jacob was saying. In verse 14, Genesis 31, then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still not any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us, also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. And Jacob knows that he has to leave. And he does flee. In verse 26 of Genesis 31, Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp, and you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now it's not too likely that he would have sent him away with joy and songs. The Bible doesn't say it, but Jacob and Laban agree to a covenant, and Jacob's family departs in peace. But the story of Leah isn't quite over. Jacob meets up with his brother Esau and fears trouble, starting in Genesis 32. And Jacob wrestles with God, who changes his name to Israel. That's in Genesis 32, verses 27 and 28. Jacob becomes Israel. And then in Genesis 33, when Jacob and Esau are about to meet, he fears trouble. And he divides his family in groups by wives and maidservants. The two maidservants and their children are in front, and Leah and her children behind them, and Rachel and Joseph last, the most protected section. So Rachel and Joseph are still the ones favored by him. In Genesis 34, there's the incident with Dinah. There are problems when Dinah is defiled by Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite. Dinah's brothers insist that the Hivites be circumcised, after which they kill all the male among the Hivites. So this is all still bloodshed because of what went on with these children. The death of Rachel is mentioned in Genesis 35. And we'll start in verses 16. Rachel, we learn, dies in childbirth, and her son Benjamin lives. And verse 16 of Genesis 35. Then they journeyed from Bethel, and when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath, Rachel labored in childbirth, and she had hard labor. Now it came to pass when she was in hard labor that the midwife said to her, do not fear, you will have this son also. And so it was, as her soul was departing, for she died in childbirth, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. And Jacob set a pillar on her grave, which is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. And I didn't check. I don't know if that pillar is standing or not, or maybe there is a pillar there somewhere that people have named after Jacob and Rachel. The Bible doesn't directly talk about Leah's death, but in Genesis 49, verse 29 through 33, we read that it had happened. Genesis 49:29. Then he charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my father in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. This is Jacob speaking. In the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. So we know that Leah had died by this time. The field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. And when Jacob had finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. So that was the death of Jacob and his burial. Now, what was God's purpose with Leah, and what was her role? Reuben was Jacob's firstborn, but he's not the one who will begin the line leading to Christ. And rather, it will be Leah's fourth son, Judah. Judah was the kingly line. David was in this line. Later on, the Lord Jesus himself, according to the flesh, came from the line of Judah. Reuben lost his position as firstborn because of his sin. Levi was the priestly tribe. Leah was the mother of some of the outstanding sons of Jacob. So this is the story of Jacob and Leah and Rachel and others in that family. Was Leah ever really happy? When we read through these sections, it doesn't seem that she was, because she was never the first love of Jacob. She did everything she could, bearing Jacob six sons and a daughter, but is always described as being unloved. You have to kind of have sympathy for Leah. Well, we all have times in our lives when we feel rejected by others, and sometimes it seems unfair to us. We just need to realize that we don't know exactly what our purpose is in God's great master plan. The time will come when it will all be made clear to us. We will find out why we're here, what our special purpose is, what the purpose is of those around us and those that we read about and hear about. What we feel, or what we might feel as unfairness in this life, may turn out to be of vast importance in God's overall plan for our lives. And then at that time, we will find out that God truly is fair